You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com. You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our first ImpactVest Fund Manager Roundtable. I'm the founder and CEO of ImpactVest, Aisha Williams, and I am here with two wonderful fund managers that I'm very happy to speak to today, Moke Abudu and Tondurai Najora. And so thank you for being here with us today. What I wanted to focus on is just your thesis of your funds, what the motivation that both of you had to launch your funds. And what we want to focus on here are the sustainable positive outcomes of investment, right? And how you see that integrated into your fund strategies, right? So let's go to intros, and I'll start with you, Mope.
Okay. All right. Aisha, it's an honor, and I'm really excited to be here and also share in a, you know, in this course. I think in terms of intro, yes, my name is Mokwe Abudu. I am the managing partner of AfriGlocal Venture Capital. We are intensely driven to support the African narrative in terms of supporting startups who are visionary, who are really, really coming up with great solutions, not just for their locality, but really using technology in very creative ways that both impact their immediate geographies, but also are solutions that can help beyond their regions. And how I got into here? Well, my background has been in financial services as well as advisory. I've worked with so many founders, both at the startup stage, both at the growth stage, and those who are even looking to list on the stock exchange. So those who are really, you know, further on. But what has also been a critical Achilles heel sometimes is the right capital. But not just throwing capital, it's really making sure that the impact, the influence of capital is well-directed. It creates the purpose of funding, which is multiplier effect. And when you say multiplier effect, it's in terms of your immediate stakeholders, your enlarged stakeholders, creating growth that is very impactful, obviously in terms of financial returns, but more importantly, the domino effect of how it's creating sustainable wealth creation. We got into this space knowing that the youthful population of most of our countries in Africa, I'm really from Nigeria, and you know we're blowing up in terms of the number of youthful people coming up with ideas. There's an opportunity for wealth creation, for businesses that make them self-sustaining. And with the right midwifery support and the right capital, they have the potentials to, you know, create mega businesses that have footprints across the region. So venture capital is critical, particularly at the earlier stages of the business growth. And we are excited and very thrilled about the possibilities that we're actually enabling.
Yes, it's very exciting. I think your focus just on scaling it and to be able to support entrepreneurs who are truly looking for and to solve sustainability challenges that we're facing, right? And to be able to provide the patient capital, the wisdom of your background to scale these solutions. So thank you, Mope. And Tondurai, let's go to you.
Thank you very much, Aisha, for this amazing and wonderful opportunity to be here. And it's quite a pleasure to be sitting with Mope, a lady I actually look up to as well. And having had worked with yourself, Aisha, in building up Impact Vest, and congratulations for the continued work that you've done thus far. Regarding the fund, the Chakata Fund, my particular background is in civil and water engineering. That is where I'm coming from. Having studied civil and water engineering with an interest of solving particularly infrastructure challenges that really are a commonplace within the African marketplace, but not only in the African marketplace, in other developing economies that we always usually want to call frontier markets, because that is where we've got many, many opportunities for investment. But where it all started was particularly through realization that there's a massive backlog, particularly mobility infrastructure. This is our highways and our airports, our rail systems. And through that, you realize and agree that transportation infrastructure is very much key where it comes to the development of communities, obviously through the movement and transportation of people, the movement and transportation of goods. It catalyzes and facilitates trade between different countries, between different communities, even from a localized perspective. And the other challenge that we have had, particularly again from a road transportation system perspective, is the fact that a lot of people have actually lost their lives traveling on these particular roads. And I'm further motivated because I've actually been involved in two accidents, road traffic accidents. One was at an intersection within a city. The other one was on a stretch in one of the mining towns within Zim. And unfortunately, that accident was fatal. So realizing that we've got these dynamics and challenges within our mobility that obviously increase costs from a loss of life perspective, from a damage of equipment perspective, there's the need to ensure that we start improving our transportation systems. Then considering and observing that it takes a lot of investment to say that we want to rehabilitate a highway, for example, or we want to start building a new highway. With my experience and exposure, I've realized that we need to prepare. We need to start somewhere. And it's not straight onto the highways that we go. So I realized that there was need to start a preparatory fund, which is anchored on trying to initially build up technologies that improve road safety, technologies that foster smart mobility, as well as technologies that utilize renewable energies in a bid to reduce emissions when it comes to our transportation sectors. So this is in the long term, looking at particularly coming up with a larger fund that then deals with rehabilitation of infrastructure services, as well as building up of new transportation facilities. So basically, the Chakata Fund comes from a song by one of the local artists in Zimbabwe called Mukudzei Mukombe. He sang a song called Hakata, where he was really encouraging people to prepare by picking up a wild fruit called called Chakata. So that is basically where we are coming from in terms of our investment thesis, and hoping to contribute towards SDG number 3, SDG number 7, as well as SDG 11.
Thank you, Tunde. And yes, you were here at the very beginning when I was scaling Impact Vest here. And this is what I really appreciate about the impact sector, because it really takes so much motivation and grit, right, to be able to invest toward sustainability solutions, which is why we're so passionate about supporting entrepreneurs and fund managers, especially in emerging and frontier markets and the global south, because that's where it's needed the most to unblock capital towards all of the sustainability challenges that you were facing. And I'm glad you brought up the importance of infrastructure, Tunde, because I really wanted to start here about both of your opinions on the importance of investing in infrastructure supporting entrepreneurs in this sector and what is still needed from investors, from the public sector. In our CEO roundtable, we spoke about the importance of private-public partnerships. In both of your opinions, what is still needed in order to drive impact capital?
Okay. I'll love to, you know, give my perspective on this. AfriGlocal had very carefully and intentionally crafted a thesis that would allow us to be key players when it comes to infrastructure. But for us, and our background and our ability to provide and to harness our expertise, we are focused on the fintech and digital infrastructure. And I do try to, stress the digital infrastructure because it's the bedrock, it's the foundation upon which new age businesses are going to grow on. It is so critical that you infuse technology, but the right technology in terms of scalability, agility, impact, in terms of meeting those who, for example, are unbanked or unreachable or underbanked. And for us, we realize that the digital infrastructure space needs the right investment, needs the right partnerships. And it's so critical to bringing our African, players to be extremely competitive with their worldwide counterparts. So for us, the digital infrastructure is the highway. It's the express medium through which, businesses can be very, easily catapulted into providing sustainable means of working, being very competitive, and their innovation having an opportunity to reach far and wide. So we are playing very much at the intersections of where fintech, because it's the enabler, meets critical markets, be it health, be it the supply chains, making sure that there is a free flow of trade opportunities, be it in terms of just our general housing, such as property, property tech or insurtech. So for us, digital infrastructure is critical. And we have realized that without building that foundation, not investing properly in that foundation, you're more or less building on shaky sounds. Just as our heads are able to wrap around the physical infrastructure in terms of roads, in terms of all those regular areas, in the digital area, it's also very critical. And what we have realized in the past few years is that the forerunner has been financial institutions creating opportunities for banking people, bringing them right into the ecosystems of being able to trade. We see how farmers can reach out to a market that previously was unattainable to them, and they're able to, create sustainable living by getting on these infrastructures. So we are very driven to make sure that our digital infrastructure investments are creating sustainable and very impactful channels, and are not only doing that, are creating the beautiful, precious, creative opportunities that our startups are using. So for us, Africa really needs to invest in infrastructure and sustainable ones that would create wealth creation, diversification for the different genders. We're also very driven to make sure that women play a critical part and come into the ecosystems of commerce very quickly, understanding the peculiarities of their gender, but also being able to play, competitively. So we're looking to make sure that from our perspective, digital infrastructure is very well invested in, and then using this as an enabler for communities.
And I think that's such an excellent point. Mope, to be able to focus on all areas of infrastructure to enable driving impact capital is a critical aspect. I think of your thesis and to be able to really see the sustainable outcomes that can be achieved, right? But first we need the infrastructure to be invested in. And what do you think about this, Tante?
So absolutely agree with what Mope is saying in terms of the need to strengthen particularly the digital infrastructure. And she's really bringing a point, a very, very important point around financial inclusion, which is critical towards the development of a lot of, for example, unbanked people, uninsured people. And you will find that largely within the developing markets, the frontier markets, these are the critical challenges that have left people not in the highway, in the financial highway, as Mope is putting it. And there's usually a distinction in terms of infrastructure, which is already clear from this discussion. That on the one hand, we've got the soft infrastructure, and on the other hand, we've got the hard infrastructure. And these two are very complementary. And I always want to look at things from a figurative perspective. We've got Mope and Tondo on the other side, and we are gelling in terms of talking about the soft side of infrastructure, which is the vision that Mope is bringing in. I am here coming in with the hard infrastructure side of it. So they are really complementary because they go hand in hand. And just to carry on with my background. As I also try and anchor really what Mope is saying, as I was actually finalizing my undergrad in civil and water engineering, my question really was, so now we've got the technical skills, the hard technical engineering skills to understand how you design a highway, to understand how also you build a highway, but there is something that is missing. And as much as I may want to become a successful engineering project manager in transportation systems, complementing other engineering disciplines, for example, mechanical engineering, electronic engineering, in trying to bring solid, hard infrastructure facilities for our people to utilize, there's still something that is missing. And that component for me was the financial aspect. So the hard technical capabilities definitely go hand in hand with the soft connectivities that come from ensuring that a lot of people are connected within the financial highway. And so basically, we also do need physical infrastructures, because in as much as we are then going to have innovations that allow, for example, agriculture to grow, agri-tech, our health tech as well, and different pieces of fintech, we will still need produce to be transferred from one place to another. We will still need trucks that move the macadamia nuts, that move the carrots, that move the fresh vegetables from one point to the other. And those initiatives to produce the vegetables have been powered, like Mope is saying, through digital infrastructure development, and for them to get to the markets in a good state, in a healthy state, because people need to eat healthy in as much as we are working towards eliminating hunger. So that is the complementarity that I believe as joint forces, we definitely bring in, and that will bring a holistic view, a holistic emergence of the impact that we are looking for.
And it's such a great point, Hande, because this is what we focus on also, is a holistic viewpoint of impact, is that we can't just look at finance or the economy as some of its parts, right? Is that it's so interconnected, and in terms of our global markets, that this is how we have to look at funding as well, right? And so when we start to have a holistic view of impact investing, we start to unblock the capital that is needed here. So you also spoke about financial inclusion, right? The unbanked and the underbanked populations, and that also goes along with the youth population here and also women being included. We speak about a lot if we want to be able to have a more holistic view of the market, then we have to actually allow those who currently can't participate in capital markets to be able to participate and to build wealth, right? We're speaking about wealth building. And this is something that we focus on quite often here is how do we actually build opportunities for those who don't to be able to build wealth, right? Because that is the foundation that we need for a holistic system to start to be created. So what are your viewpoints about investing in financial inclusion, what still needs to be done, and how you will both address this in your own funds?
Okay. This is an area very close to, you know, right bang in the middle in terms of what we're doing. In general, we really, really look to seek those beautiful ideas driven by very driven founders who are able to build within their solutions critical information beyond just the service. We find data playing a very, very critical role, both to the user in terms of them even educating their understanding of how they could improve, you know, their involvement in the commerce sector and their own individual growth, but also educating all stakeholders so that the market becomes a whole lot more fine-tuned. When it comes to financial inclusion, you have issues in terms of accessibility, you have issues in terms of language, culture, spending abilities, a whole mirage of things. And it's not good enough to just have a product that is, you know, it's not customized, it's not really understanding the pain points of those who are actually going to use it. So what we find is that solutions that are really understanding the geography, the peculiarities, and educating them in terms of how they can improve themselves makes the adoption of the service a whole lot better. They don't feel they are stifled into use it. They actually see, you know, the service actually improving their role. So what we've found is that accessibility is very important. So we look at the value chain opportunities. We try and make sure that their whole lives are actually impacted through the solutions that are being given. So financial inclusion is not just onboarding more customers. It's actually moving them away from subsistence living into a much more, you know, a much more informed and positioned entrepreneur, budding an entrepreneur, for example. And you see that if it's a system that can even bring in teams of people or rather than one individual at a time, you also find the power of collaborations, you know, coming to bear, and their adoption is a whole lot easier. So we're also looking at how data is also helping beyond just the provision of a service. And this makes sure that businesses in one region can learn from what is happening in another region. You don't have to repeat the challenges that are being done, and their adoptions are a whole lot smoother and better. We've found that, you know, the regular credit scoring system only applies to those mostly within the urban area, those who probably have, you know, regular jobs. But that doesn't mean that those who are not within that circle can't be credit scored in a manner that is peculiar to that area. And we actually find statistics shows that they are the most reputable when it comes to payback, when it comes to actually, you know, going further and growth. And what we find is that we don't want businesses to continually have the tag of SME. It should just be a stage of life. They should be moving on to be growth businesses, and they should be moving on to be our sunicorns and unicorns at some point. So we need to make sure that we create this pipeline of businesses. Those who are excluded, women, because of their the peculiarities that run with them. If we have solutions that are looking at their lifestyle and at the different pain points, we're addressing them, then they come into the system easily. So we're very, very desirous of investing those businesses that, you know, tick those boxes beyond just the regular, you know, great MVP or great service or product going forward.
Yeah, and this really makes me think of the discussions around impact measurement and verification is that when you're looking at impact, it's local, like you were saying, Mokbe, you really have to be able to go beyond what is normally looked for, maybe in a term sheet or if you're asking a portfolio company or metrics, and really get into the local impacts or how it's going to look to a wider stakeholder group, right? And so that's what's really important when we're speaking about scaling capital and unblocking impact capital into Africa and the global South is to be able to recognize that the impact standards that we need are actually created locally, and we have to actually integrate them into wider investment strategies, right? And yeah, that can only be done on the ground level, right? But what we're really speaking about is local impact that has not been considered, which is why we have the SDG financing gap, right? Because we're missing standards here. We're missing the on the ground knowledge that only fund managers can give, who like you and Tande, who are on the ground, who have the local knowledge, who are there, who know what the portfolio companies and entrepreneurs need. And then we can integrate that into wider strategies. But if we don't have knowledge of that, it's very difficult to drive capital. And I see you're nodding your head, Tande, so I'll go to you.
Yes. It's very, very true. And I would actually want to again allude to what Mope is saying in terms of the gaps that we actually have in the markets. And I will revise what she also said in terms of how we decide, for example, to utilize the finances or the funds that we actually have from a very, very individual level. And I think it boils down to around about three key issues that, for example, if you earn a salary, these are the basic things that you think about. But mostly, in fact, there is one thing that usually people think about, which is spending. And in fact, there are three things that you can actually then decide to do with your money. The first thing being obviously saving. That's one of the key things that comes to mind. The second thing being investing. And obviously the third thing, which usually is the first, is consumption and spending. And it is one thing definitely that most of the individuals at least need to be educated about. And the step further that we may go even within our further engagement with different communities is to allow people to be able to look at their different risk portfolios. I'll give you not portfolios necessarily, but risk exposures that usually affect the earnings of people. And what I'm thinking about is a situation, for example, where you have within a country, you've got challenges with currency risk. A lot of people tend not to even understand how that affects their earnings. But in some countries, you've had people actually losing value where the currency actually erodes. So these are some of the things that need to be put into the market, and where we can obviously have a positive impact in helping companies and individuals to be able to understand how different risk dynamics actually play. But then going back to, again, that issue of trying to mobilize investments in different spaces of impact. Again, looking at the consumption aspect of the three, I will have an example that in the last year, statistics have it that the African diaspora actually remitted around 46 billion United States dollars back home, and this is just probably within a month. Someone decides to say maybe I will send 5% of my salary back home, or even 10%. But imagine what would happen if we are not only looking at consumption, but also looking at investments and savings. And that African diaspora sending only 46 billion United States dollars for consumption, what would it be if we then say, okay, let's increase that to 20 or 50% of a salary. Because now I'm saying I want to invest in Africa. Now I'm saying I want to save in Africa. How much more impact does that have? And what that does is, because finance is a catalyst, investments are a catalyst for development, and moreover, impact. What's the impact when it comes to the physical infrastructure that we're talking about, as well as the digital infrastructure that we are talking about? So basically, what I'm saying is, we have the power to financially include ourselves. And as much as the markets may have seemed to exclude us somehow because of different needs, but again, back to the point of what you were saying, Aisha, about localization of impact, localization of initiatives, it's critical that within the risk management frameworks that our banks are operating, that our insurance companies are operating, and different other financiers and investors, it's key to be able to evaluate risks within the African continent, within the development market perspective, and be able to see, okay, so what are the critical issues that we need to consider when we're considering risk? And what are the issues that we tend to say these are critical when they are not? I will give an example later regards to the initial banks, for example, that we had during colonial Africa, or and the banks that are beginning to emerge post-colonial Africa, and even where we look at private equity, venture capital, and other means of funding and financing investment for impact.
That actually is a perfect segue to the article that I'm writing in about 2 weeks on risk, on the risk premium, and how it should be reframed and reconsidered, because that's right to the point, Tunde, is that if we do not have the correct risk frameworks within wider investment strategies and portfolio construction strategies, then the outcome is going to be biased and skewed, which is what we see in capital today. But if risk is considered for the African context, including local impact, and then it's used within a wider portfolio construction strategy, the outcome in terms of capital is going to be very different. It's going to be very strategic in where it's deployed, right? And so it's really starting to analyze those risk frameworks and who is framing that risk analysis, right? And what, who is it intended for? And so we really start to get into the foundational finance models here. Is that what we want to address also here, and what I write about? Those will be my next couple of articles, that our portfolio construction strategies, if we're speaking about venture capital, private equity, they're within alternative investments, but the portfolio construction strategies that we're using are quite old, right? They actually have not adapted to the new reality that we're seeing today, is that our growth markets are in Africa. They're actually not in the West, right? And so what we have to consider are, well, what is risk, right? Who is looking at risk? What about the risk premium? If it's considered riskier to invest in a certain investment, maybe we should consider that the risk premium should be a space where investors test out their strategy. It's a sort of experimentation, and that's what I'll write about soon. But it's about reframing and a sort of deconstruction of what we consider to be a successful portfolio strategy in terms of patient capital. There are many models that actually have not even been built yet, right? And then once we start to build them, then we'll start to close the SDG financing gap, right? So going along this idea of reframing risk, right? If there are new models to be built to reframe risk, to unblock capital, what do you think those models have to include to be adapted for the African context?
You know, models really need to look at two critical areas, best fit. And sometimes, you know, I challenge the word best practice, you know, sometimes, because it's only best practice if it works in a particular area. Yes, there are minimum standards, but sometimes the standards need to be tweaked to best fit a particular area. So whatever models we're going to look at, is it must take into recognition outputs that are relatable and are doing, are achieving the objectives for that region, not to meet the objectives of another region or another geography or another stakeholder who may not really be as close. So our models need to be critical about what are the immediate strategic objectives that want to be met, and then we create models that meet those objectives. And then it could then be time-framed in terms of making sure that it's a continuum rather than just meeting. Africa is the fastest growing continent, basically. So whatever we even set in the, for the next 5 years as our strategic objectives are definitely going to be obsolete, you know, the next 5 years or probably even sooner. And then we set another level. So our models must also be very time framed to make sure that it's one, it's pulling people, you know, very quickly, but we're also looking ahead at the next stages. So our models need to look at what is the risk appetite in terms of our positioning as a continent now, and must then also look in terms of how we want to play, you know, in the next few years. Obviously, within Africa, there is even still quite a lot of inequality, the West, the East, and the South and everything. But looking at the strengths of each one, we can then have models that are peculiar to those areas. So timeframes, very important. The critical needs within that area need to be taken into consideration. And then look at the bigger perspective rather than the domino effect in terms of how they would be able to carry on their sister, brother, parts of Africa as well. So they don't really need to replicate the learnings, the painful learnings that they may have gone on. And I also think we need to take into consideration the benefits that we have. Youth, how do they think? You only need to have an organization full of millennials or under to understand that the working pattern is totally different. So what kind of models are we going to put in place that would be very easily adopted willingly by the youthful population? What tools would they be using? How would we equate, you know, success to what they feel is important as well? If we are only fulfilling all righteousness to meet other stakeholders and it's not meeting individual personal aspirations in terms of how they see themselves, is it living in a cleaner environment? Is it, you know, understanding you know, what your next door neighbor needs? Because as a youth, these are things that are very important to them. So our models must take into consideration the individuals who are the role players, as well as the wider stakeholders who might be more interested in, you know, the you know, how it looks, more importantly. So it's balancing these acts that are very critical.
And that's such an excellent point, Mope. It's important to think about our workplace cultures and the kind of the growth markets that we see there, and they're going to look very different on the African continent. And it's about adapting the investment strategies to reflect this and to be very adaptive. And I think that's truly one of the criteria of driving impact capital, is to be able to be adaptive for all of the changes going forward, right? And to be able to keep in mind that local impacts will change, workplace cultures will change, and for investors on the other side, to have capital that adapts with these changes, right? What do you think, Tonde?
I very much agree with what you say, Mope, and I want to say something very, very controversially, just in a bit to try and inspire some thought. If we are going to look, for example, at biodiversity, and I'm hoping that I will just touch upon a few impact issues that are quite pertinent in this particular time. So just as an example, biodiversity, and taking biodiversity vis-a-vis the time value of money, which Mopé is very much alluding to in terms of how we structure our portfolios. Take for instance a country that is in Africa with amazing biodiversity, and look at the potential investments that you have in there. Just as an example, your infrastructure, your real estate. Where is it going to be much safer to invest in real estate in a country that has got a vast array of biodiversity from your flora and your fauna, to a country where we are also looking at, for example, it's a country in the west. It's on the east coast where there's potential for flood risk due to climate change and global warming. Obviously, what you're going to look at is investing your real estate in a place where there's a balanced ecosystem from a biodiversity perspective, simply because the risk of losing your real estate to flooding is lesser in that country with an amazing biodiversity portfolio of flora and fauna. And this is basically coming from a values perspective. And continuing with the controversy, I've always had a funny thought in my mind that says, you know what, in most of the African countries, and probably not only Africa, but even some of the developing economies, you will find the example I usually want to use is coming again from flora and fauna. You will have your mountains that are seen as sacred mountains. You will have your animals that are seen as totems, whereby, for example, you're coming from the elephant totem. What it simply means is you're not allowed to eat an elephant. And what that has done is it's wisdom that has allowed the preservation of our biodiversity. Because if I'm coming from a particular animal totem clan, it simply means the consumers of that particular animal have decreased. And I just want to put it out there again, controversially. Imagine if you're going to say the Germans and maybe the Austrians are no longer allowed to eat any fish. Their totem is the fish from the sea. What it simply means is they are going to ensure that their investments go into protecting the fish in the ocean and anything else that is linked to the fish. And imagine what then happens to the population of the fish. Imagine what then happens to the coral reefs, simply because we're saying we've got an amazing value system that decides to look at risk, not in the traditional way, but to try and also say, but where has value been created from a biodiversity perspective? Where has value been created from a social perspective? And that then allows us to say, in as much as we are looking at our finance from a financial risk perspective, but we also have impacts that we're looking at achieving. But some of these impacts are already there, and we can see that biodiversity has been preserved. And so as we are analyzing our impact, as we are analyzing our financial impact, our environmental impact, let us be able then to take cognizance of some of these places where the frontier markets are already performing. I think that's the controversy I would want to add.
Yeah, and such an excellent point, Tunde. It's about creating value, and it goes along with what we speak about, that investors should think about where their capital creates the most value. So if they're looking at frontier markets, looking on the African continent, even if they consider a company to be a brown company, their pound, their euro, their dollar can go further, right? It's about the value creation that happens within the investment and within the fund, right? And when we're speaking about the sustainable outcomes and solving the challenges of the SDGs, they're found in the Global South, right? And this is where we have the most amount of value creation. And so this also goes into unlocking capital to be able to go towards not only the outcomes, but the most amount of value creation. And that's something that is not considered enough within investment strategies at the moment, right? Because again, where the metrics and the models that we need still have to be created, right? And so maybe 10, 20 years from now, it'll be a very different landscape. But this is what I speak to my team a lot about, that we're part of building the foundation of what's to come and building the models and showing that actually what we need to look at are local impacts, value creation. We need to start to reframe and deconstruct what have been the primary investment models for decades here. And that needs to change. And it kind of changes through starting to reframe a lot of the strategies that have driven capital for many years. And that brings me to our last question. We've had a great conversation here on our roundtable. We'll have to have a part two. but my last question is related to this. If we're speaking about value creation, and both of your friends are wonderful for able to have the on-the-ground perspective of what we actually need to focus on in sustainability and impact, about the power of capital, the purpose of capital here, right? And so, Mope, I will go to you. What do you see as the value creation of your fund and how it leads to the outcomes that you want to create?
Thank you, Aisha, for that question. And I feel surrounded with so much alignment, you know, on this podcast in terms of, you know, the alignment and thoughts and purpose and the rest. And that question is really at the forefront of doing what I do. You know, what really is the value? When we thought about, you know, what would really describe or epitomize, you know, our reason for being, AfriGlocal was intentional. We want to make sure that though local, there is a global perspective. So we want to make sure that the value we bring are footprints that may start humbly, locally, but has the potential to create value across regions, across borders, through partnerships, through handshakes, linking on to the next stage of value that could be financed by the follow-on capital. We're not just about the now. We want to make sure that we fulfill the now and we very seamlessly put those we're working with in the comfortable arms of the next follow-on investor or the next stage investor for their growth and their footprints across regions, you know, to become global in their perspective, global in their impact, global in their influence, and global in showcasing what they have is really, really, really realized and not just dreamt of. It becomes an actualization. And for us, it is high time that our local, you know, greatness is actually seen globally. So we're Africans. We want to make sure that the wealth of experience that is available is given to local entrepreneurs, local, you know, institutions, and then they can actually become global in terms of their visibility, in terms of their impact. And this we will do by handshaking with the right ethical and corresponding financial partners, with the right corporate institutions to handshake their introduction into new markets. We would handshake with individuals who would, you know, increase this footprint across. And that really is the value. And that really for us will be fulfillment, which ranks, you know, right up there as well as returns, you know.
And that is so inspiring, Mope, when you speak about the value creation that you want to see in your fund and what you want to be able to create and see. And that's what we need to be able to build portfolio construction strategies that drive capital towards venture capital in the global south, in Africa, and to be able to incorporate both local and global impacts, right? And to have this more holistic viewpoint of impact. And so that's what is needed here. And what about you, Tunde?
It's surprising at times that you have someone taking the words right out of you. And yes, I would honestly say that one of the words that Mope has already said is intentionality of our funds. And I would also say that one of the key things that we are working on, which Mopi has already said, is trying to prepare the way for those that are also coming after us. And the whole point being, at this particular stage, maybe we can say funds, venture capital, private equity is within its growth stage on the African continent. And we are at a very, very exciting stage whereby we are sort of building and we are sort of setting up the standards of African venture capital and private equity towards real impact, just beyond creating financial value through profits, which is the value that we've been talking about. So essentially, where we are is where we are saying we are really preparing the markets. We are really preparing towards investor interest. Interestingly, I was having a conversation with the family office this morning, and we were talking about we were really wondering, but how exactly can you, for example, integrate impact within a family office? And it's a lot of ways that you can integrate that impact. But the very first thing that you need is to understand what are the issues that we need to bring to the table. What are the issues where there are conflicts? What are the issues that we agree upon? And the only best way that we can have everyone coming to the table is through preparation. And I will say this again, that is what the Chakata Fund is standing for, supporting funds like AfriLocal to prepare, to be able to pick up the Chakata fruit in terms of ensuring that investments going forward create the real non-financial impact along with the financial impact that we're looking for.
I think it's because we're so aligned on what we all want to achieve, right? And so it makes it such a wonderful conversation to speak about the value creation and, like what you were saying, Tunde, the non-financial impact that should be considered right up there with the financial impact and almost more important than it, right? Because something that I've spoken about and I wrote about previously, if we have financial impact at the expense of positive impact, then is it true financial impact? And those are the questions that need to be asked of the investment industry. How is financial impact being created? If it's being created by negative impact, and then we need to rethink the purpose of capital, the direction of it, the strategy, the deployment of it, right? It has to be couched in, supported by positive impact outcomes. And that's why it's been so wonderful and exciting to speak to both of you today. We're so happy to support both of you and to really build the future of impact investing and to start to reframe, to start to deconstruct, and to build the foundation for what's to come. It's a very exciting time, but it's up to us, right, to build the future here, because it's possible, but we have the responsibility, I believe, to build the future for investors to come, for entrepreneurs to come, of defining what true investment means, right? So thank you, both Mopi and Tunde. A great conversation. I am looking forward to a part two of our roundtable.
It's been a pleasure. It's really been a pleasure. Yeah.
Tunde, it's great having you on, and there's so much work to be done, obviously, but it's really, really good in terms of really clearly seeing, this is not a muffled picture, clearly seeing what we want to achieve out of and the capital and the outputs and the driven excitement to get this done. Aisha, it's been really, really great. Thank you so much for inviting me to this platform. Really excited about what's to come.
Thank you. It's really been a pleasure. The honor is all mine. It's so motivating and inspiring to speak to both of you, to see the future that we can all build here. And what we have to do is to start to reframe, to start to see, well, what exactly does it mean to be an investor and to create value and what is impact and what is the correct type of financial return? What is it based on, right? So if we're creating a holistic ecosystem, then we have to think how all of these parts that have been considered separate start to be interconnected together, right? And so that's it's been a great conversation. So thank you, Mabe and Tunde, and I look forward to our next roundtable.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.